It's time to catch the beat for Market Street on WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM. Your community radio station is in the heart of the action in downtown Champaign. And Catch the Beat brings highlights of local news, arts, culture, and issues to pay attention to. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages. Featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop is at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign. Online at Jane Addams, that's addamsbooks.com. As always on WEF, the views and opinions expressed on air are solely those of the speaker and do not necessarily represent those of WEF Champaign, Prairie Air Inc., station management, the board of directors, or the WEF associates. I'm your host, Cope Cumston. I'm delighted to welcome Emily McCown, who is a well-known person in Champaign-Urbana as a community organizer and musician. You are also the well-known and much-appreciated host of the Hootenanny at the Rose Bowl on Monday nights. And much more than that, you helped to start the nonprofit for CU Sings, People's Chorus. You serve on the booking committee for CU Folk and Roots Festival, and you're a regular volunteer and coach for Girls Rock CU. And that is all your extracurricular. Your day job is as director of campus ministry at McKinley Foundation. And so you really have, I think, quite a wonderful combination of music, community life, and spiritual life. Let me open the floor to you. Let's begin with your life with music. So what's your own musical story? What were you first drawn to, and how did that grow in your life?
Thanks for having me, Cope. Music has been a part of my life really since day one. My parents tell the story that that my dad's barbershop quartet, well, they did. They came to the hospital room. To my mother's chagrin, no, she was pleased to be sung to, but my dad's quite a fanatic for barbershop music.
So that was when you were delivered?
Yeah, my first day of life here on earth.
That's a pretty good welcome. I love barbershop quartets.
Yeah, yes, it's a beautiful community that he's a part of, and it's some, you know, barbershoppers that... Four-part harmony, a cappella music takes some real talent to be able to tune your ear and your voice like that. They say that I looked up and smiled at my dad when the first song that they started singing, and come to find out, I'm learning about the development of newborns, and I'm not sure that they can really see across the room, but I think it's a sweet story.
But they can hear.
They can hear, yeah.
And you probably heard In Utero. I used to play music to my daughter. I put a Walkman on my belly, so I think.
Yeah.
I think that's a big influence.
Absolutely. So a lot of singing in the house growing up. My dad was a huge influence for sure, and he played as a hobby acoustic guitar, playing songs around the house. There's a VHS home video of me writing a song as a toddler about the old woman who lived in the shoe. So, you know, there's documentation of my songwriting. I'll say that I've done musicals and took piano lessons and voice lessons. I play a few different instruments now, but songwriting has been my main musical passion since a young age, for sure.
What instruments do you play?
I play guitar, piano, and accordion as the kind of main three. Those get me to where I'm trying to go, which is mostly focusing on singing. Singing is my first love and will always be, I'm sure.
That probably is what led you directly to CU Sings, the People's Chorus.
Absolutely.
So tell us a little bit about that.
That was the brainchild of the conductor Frank Gallo, not to be confused with the painter in town, Frank Gallo, but he was teaching the chamber singers course at Parkland Community College since I think could have been 2016, 2017. I enrolled in that class when I first, shortly after I moved to town in 2018. And yeah, and he just had this incredible knack for taking untrained singers who had never even read sheet music before, a group of strangers, and turning them into an ensemble. So over the course of his first few years at Parkland, we were really gathering momentum. COVID set us back, of course, but then bouncing back after COVID, it gathered steam right quick, right again. And eventually, in meetings with the Parkland administration, the chorus, just ragtag team of community members, was getting so big that it made the most sense to incorporate us as our own nonprofit. So I was just a singer in the ensemble, and I had some experience with nonprofit governance from my time as executive director at Channing Murray Foundation through the COVID years. So that was the transition point for me out of Channing Murray. I signed on to help Frank incorporate and run all the paperwork to become a 501c3 for CU Sings.
And that's a lot of paperwork.
People.
What advantages does it give you to be a formal nonprofit?
Well, I think raising our own funds, there was a certain amount of limitations with space and negotiating the other arts programs at Parkland. And the music department, as students are actually enrolled at Parkland, is really pretty small. There was only about, I think, one person in our 50-person chorus at the time that we were still at Parkland, that was an actual music degree seeking student at Parkland. So becoming our own nonprofit meant that we could really program concerts and collaborate with other nonprofits and get out into the community a little bit more and have more flexibility about what kind of things we were programming beyond just fulfilling the curricular requirements of the Parkland students, which were a very small fraction of the demographic that was showing up to sing. So
I didn't realize it was such an organized and formal group. So that's a big accomplishment. That will give it a life, probably long into the future.
that is the hope. We decided on the name CU Sings as the nonprofit name and People's Chorus as the ensemble name because we were just experiencing so much growth and momentum that we could see branching off into smaller ensembles in the future. And it's still moving that direction. This concert season, there are over 100 singers. So we've grown from in 2018, I think it was 7 people. And today it's over 100. So it's an exciting thing to be a part of.
Well, let's move on to the Hootenanny, because that's sort of the focus of what I thought we'd be talking about until I realized how much you do. So, how did you first get involved with the Rose Bowl and the Hootenanny?
Well, the origin story is that I was looking for a new place to live after I was ready to be done living in the Pacific Northwest, which was where I went to college. And I was pretty quickly charmed by the music scene in Urbana and going to the Rose Bowl. My friends had been coming and attending the Hootenanny since its inception. I think the Hootenanny is at least 13 years old. I went to the Hootenanny as a place to meet people. And when they were playing a John Prine song, I remember it was Rob Crumb who was leading or had suggested a John Prine song. Was it Paradise, I think? And I could hear the boys on the stage negotiating, well, we should do Paradise, but oh, who's gonna sing it? Who's gonna sing it? I don't wanna sing it. I don't wanna sing it. And I was like, hey. sitting up next to the stage where they had the railing. I was kind of leaning over the railing saying, "Hey, you gotta let me sing it. Let me up there." So I jumped up with the band and sang my heart out. And that was the beginning of a long line of friendships and collaborations. Sam Payne at the time was the weekly host, and he had been doing it since his band started it as a residency. It was the Corn Desert Ramblers, and they were playing for a few hours every Monday night, and eventually they opened it up to the community to join in as an acoustic jam, which is what it is today.
That's right. It's a very important aspect of the Hootenanny that it is only acoustic.
Yes, yeah,
Yeah.
absolutely.
Now you can blast pretty loud with an accordion, but
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The accordion is the upper limit for
yeah.
sure. Sam, when he was ready to passed the baton for hosting, he passed it to me. And I'm very much indebted to him for that. It's a beautiful community event that's lasted a long time, and I'm very grateful. The organizing of it is very much impromptu and improvisational with whoever walks in the door, and I appreciate that piece of it. There's not much rehearsal, if any. And so there's a particular kind of musician that it attracts, which is comfortable with mistakes, proficient enough to hang on and still make some music with whoever walks in the door. We stick to simple songs, three or four chords, or we try to anyway, for the big kind of group jams where all players are welcome. And then we balance that, the host, which these days is either me or my good friends, Clayton Deering and Brad Olson. We take turns hosting. The hosts balance group jams where everybody's invited on stage to take turns soloing, take turns leading the song. Those group jams are balanced with more singer-songwriters or smaller ensembles that want to feature their own songs and arrangements. And so on Monday night at 8 p.m., just kicking it off right at 8 on a Monday, it certainly takes a lot of energy, especially when it gets dark at 4 p.m. I appreciate the way that Clayton, Brad, and I try to focus on making it an inclusive and supportive space for young artists to try out new material and make mistakes and feel supported, and being able to cater to the audience as much as we cater to young, eager players. So we try and balance the musicality throughout the evening so that the audience gets a good show no matter what.
And that's a challenge. Yeah.
Yeah, and I think it's the reason we don't do a sign-up list, because if you're a young musician going to open mics, you know that often you'll go to an open mic in the city or whatever, and there's a sign-up sheet. People are just kind of waiting for their slot, waiting for their 10 minutes, and busting out the door. They want to be seen, and that's great. But at the Hootenanny, we want to encourage people to talk to each other and really develop a relational approach to community music making.
Do you perform at the Hootenanny ever?
Yeah, absolutely. Usually the host will kick it off and just kind of test out the mics and deal with any feedback if there is any. But Dusty Norder, who's the sound guy every week, always treats us nice. So I get to test out my songs as much as anybody else and keep my instrumentalist chops up as much as I can, playing along with the band. Yeah. I am actually, as a part of my thesis for my Master of Arts in Theology, electing to compose one song as a part of that.
You also are on the booking committee of CU Folk and Roots. And
Yeah.
boy, it was great this year. I love Folk and Roots. I love just walking from place to place. And now with the Royer Hotel, that adds a whole new sense and a whole new scope.
I'm learning a lot. I play a very minimal supportive role. Carrie Chandler, who's the director, at least the head of the booking committee, she takes care of all the contracts. And we, as the committee, we collect suggestions from other people and have suggestions ourselves, and we put them into a big pile and sort through what our spending is together and what priorities we might have to platform perhaps marginalized or otherwise artists that might need our support or that just round out the diversity of artists that we're trying to call into our community. I love listening to especially Charlie and Cody, who've been in the business for a long time. Charlie Harris, who runs the Rose Bowl, and Cody Jensen, he's a musician for the university, accompanying dance classes, and he's famous in the folk music world around here. These two have been volunteering and doing the booking and helping out with the fest for quite a while now, probably close to a decade, if not more. And they're very much professional touring artists, so they've got a keen sense of the transition that has really happened, I think, for folk festivals at large in the US, which is definitely diversifying and trying to understand what folk and roots means in the American context, to kind of do that with an anti-racist lens and, yeah, support marginalized artists. Their grasp on all these like micro genres is really interesting, and in how they relate to each other. And you should interview them at some point about this, because
Oh, I
I
will. Well,
think
I
they're
love
experts.
listening to what the musicians have to say during
Yes.
Folk and Roots, because how they interact with each other, and when somebody will just step up and jam with it with another group, it's great. I think it really builds a big camaraderie among these musicians who come from quite far away.
Absolutely. I think there's an intimacy in our folk festival that artists don't get in other folk festivals. We offer kind of homestays and workshops, and it's family friendly. And I think artists go away from our fest with a real sense of community.
And they go into the schools, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely.
So you organize that on top of everything else. Because that's complicated.
Sure. Yeah, absolutely. I think Carrie especially has been doing that in the last few years, and they're doing a great job. I luckily don't have to deal with those logistics.
I want to ask you about one of my very favorite groups in the community, which is Girls Rock. I've actually interviewed a few of them on WEFT. You're a volunteer and a coach. So, what all happens with that group?
I had the privilege of being one of the first coaches, I think that first summer, I believe it was 2018. Girls Rock had been incorporated and was getting its start before that, but the first official week-long camp, we had about eight girls signed up, two bands, 8 to 10 girls, and boy, it was such a blast. I was very much a newcomer to town, and I got to meet a lot of awesome femme and queer musicians as the camp counselors, and got to sing karaoke and write songs with the campers. It was a really, really fun experience. We didn't have a lot of volunteers that year. It's definitely grown exponentially since then. So I got a lot of FaceTime with the girls. And one thing that astounds me every time we do this is that there will often be a point of conflict or contention, that someone wants to play this instrument and not at that instrument, and they're fighting over who gets to be the lead singer, or there's all of this negotiation of collaboration that goes on, and sometimes it can get really intense. And often, in my experience, The kids are so attuned to one another and the importance of the collective project. And if the listeners don't know, the idea of this summer camp is that we pull girls of the same age group together to form a band and write one song in a week and then perform it at the end of the camp. And so even when there's conflict, the girls understand the goal and are so committed to this project that their forgiveness and compromise is just so natural to them so that they can make it happen. Like it really doesn't take a lot of facilitation from us to help them achieve their dreams, which is performing their one song on Saturday. The skill building that is so beautiful, I think, in being in a band, in doing collaborative music, is the capacity and the muscle that you build to listen at the same time that you're voicing your own part and particularity. We need that for democracy so bad. My songwriting process starts really with lyrics and having a lyrical, like a word-based melody. So even in conversation in my everyday, I'm always on the lookout for a catchy phrase or a meaningful sentiment, a set of words or lyrics that have some musicality, and make a little voice memo on my phone and save it for later. I have quite the orchestra in my head, but not a lot of theory to back it up. My partner Jacob is a big influence. He's also a lifelong musician. He writes some songs. He certainly helps me finish mine, and he's got more theory. So my last album of original songs, he helped to arrange and record. And that was a dream come true. His musical sense really brought them to life in a way that I couldn't have ever achieved on my own. So I'm very grateful for that.
And how do people get your albums?
Yeah, they're on streaming platforms, and you come find me at the Hootenanny, I'll give you one. I've got a CD.
Okay. Do you work with a sound studio?
There's a really sweet and savvy engineer who lived in town and unfortunately moved away about last year, but he called his house Shangri-La Studios, and he had all the recording gear and setup that any musician would desire. So he recorded a lot of local music in his time in Urbana, and we miss him dearly. Matt Wenzel and Shangri-La Studios.
In your musical life, what has been most satisfying to you?
Certainly feeling connected to people is a big part of my satisfaction. One reason why I love performing is I feel like I get to share singular moment with a lot of people all at the same time. And that's a thrill for me for sure. There's the philosopher that calls that social effervescence. I think that's perhaps the biggest thing for me, though, in my older life, I've come to realize how much songwriting is a spiritual practice for me and a part of what it takes to live in a world that has a lot of trauma and suffering. Songwriting helps me to make sense of it and bolster my spirit for sure.
You are finishing your master's in art and theology. How is that a part of everything else that you do? And do you hope that it will take you somewhere bigger, different?
I'm really at home here in Urbana. I love the collaborations and projects that I have at my disposal. So perhaps I hope that the art and theology degree will take me to new spiritual places, but not physical ones. Yeah, the culminating thesis project is one about dynamic attunement. I take some lessons from the educator and Brazilian activist Paulo Freire about, he talked about the pedagogy of the oppressed and how you really need to know yourself in order to work across difference. And so my research and creative work is about dynamic attunement and what it takes to attune yourself to the lives of others. You can't do it in a vacuum. You can't like tune your instrument and take it somewhere else and expect it to keep playing exactly as you intended it to before. That showing up in community means that you have to have a strong sense of self, and you have to be able to quickly identify and perceive the stimuli from a vast amount of people and their particularity. So similar to the idea that I was articulating before with the value of being in a band and holding your own part while you're listening, I think this is a big part of my theology and philosophy of life. And it's something that I want to keep sharing with the world. But planting my feet here in Urbana is going to be a big part of how I do that. So.
It is a remarkable community for music, for people getting together. And I am delighted to have this conversation with you and hear a bit more about what is behind all of the things that you do.
Thanks, Cope. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about it. Thanks for having me.
That wraps up our time for this week's Catch the Beat. I give a big thanks to Emily McCown, one of the hosts for the weekly Hootenanny on Monday nights at the Rose Bowl, as well as community musician, activist, and director of campus ministry at the McKinley Foundation. It's a full life, and it's a pleasure to hear more of Emily's story. And make note of the upcoming concert of CU Sings People's Chorus, Light and Joy, Carols for All, on Sunday, December 14th at 5:30 p.m. at Wesley United Methodist Church, 103 West Green Street in Urbana. The concert is in collaboration with the Unitarian Universalist Church Crooners, Sycamore Brass Ensemble with guest percussionists, and special guest Scott McLeod. Catch the Beat is brought to you in part by the listeners of WEFT and Jane Addams Bookshop in downtown Champaign. For more than 40 years, Jane Addams Bookshop has been a destination for readers and book lovers of all ages, featuring three floors of gently used books, greeting cards, journals, and more. Jane Addams Bookshop at 208 North Neal in downtown Champaign, online at janeaddamsbooks.com. You're listening to WEFT Champaign 90.1 FM, streaming on weft.org. All episodes of Catch the Beat are archived on the WEFT website at weft.org under Public Affairs. You can also listen to live stream and archive shows on the WEFT app, available on your favorite app store. With thanks to Creative Commons for intro and outro music by Kevin McLeod, see you next time.